Yeah.
I don't even know her name. I occasionally listen to Desert Islanders. This Friday, there was... She's a woman and she's apparently the Vice Chancellor of Oxford. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what her name was. But what she was saying was that she's wholeheartedly for freedom of speech. She doesn't believe in the safe spaces. She believes that it's people have a right and should be offended. And especially for students. They should be exposed to all sorts of opinions. And they should be allowed to be offended. And they should examine why they are offended and what is it that offends them, so that they can grow as people, men and women, and politically. Do you know her name?
My second name was Richardson. I'm from an Irish family.
Yes.
So there was lots of references to Seamus Senior, etc.
She was?
Yeah.
She did belong to the IRA at one point.
Attempted to join the IRA. Attempted. Didn't join it. It's my recollection of the IRA.
We don't want to comment on these things now, or
I don't recall her name. I didn't hear the program, but I would certainly agree with that being offended is part of debate, is part of education.
Hi, thank you for your talk. I just want to pick up on your language here. I think the word despicable and rose is wholly wrong. We have to use strong language to describe Rose and what he was doing to human beings. I think the phrase, he was a fucking monster, is the only language that is associated with this man. His crimes against humanity are unbelievable, truly, truly horrendous. And I think if we use a language like despicable, that totally falls under the radar how truly horrible a human being he is. What ostrich represents, because it makes kind of ostrich look just a little bit despicable. And ostrich itself loves and created this human being, and they should be heavily criticized much more strongly than the word despicable. Would you use more appropriate language in the future?
I don't particularly have any comments to make on that.
Yes or no would be a good
one. Right, anybody else want to say anything?
I think that was in there. This often in the newspapers, a group of people say that the American nation or the British nation should apologise for something that happened a long time ago. When I think about this, and I think about the aspects of the nation, because lots of European nations were empires, lots of European nations took control of the countries. Now, I don't defend this, but what gets in the way here is the concept of it was the French and the British and the rest of them. And in fact, what it was capitalism. Capitalism meant to find new markets. So, people get led down the lines of nationhood and that, when it should be about class. Because when all these things were going on, thank you. The working class group in Britain or in England, they were being treated very badly as well. I mean, we had children as sweeps, we had dock workers on casual labour and stuff, and there's a whole load of things which are basically due to capitalist system. And it's not about nation states. It's the point I'd like to make.
You want to say something, Pat?
Yes, on this language describing what an individual or even a country or group of individuals, the facts as presented by the speaker said it all, in a short speech. It said all and placed the reasons for opposing what Rhodes did, and I don't think we have to resort to sort of foul language or whatever to, I'm not saying that that's what the friend behind was saying, but to emphasise how bad the behaviour of particular individuals may may be. But of course, as other comrade said, it's they were within the system, and whilst we wouldn't excuse it, we can explain it as being what was happening within the system. But it's the facts of the matter, I think, that count rather than how we deplore it.
Anybody else? Well, can I say something? in the Paris Commune, when they had a revolution, they did tear down lots of statues and things, and was that the column, the Vendôme column, and so on. But don't you think that perhaps in the Socialist Revolution, we will actually take the statue of Rhodes down and lots of other statues. Nelson Collins one, and I can think of, you walk through parks and there's a statue to General this and Admiral that. I mean, all these are going to come down, surely, aren't they, at some point?
Yeah, in the context of a sort of Socialist Revolution, yes. I mean, a socialist people who have freed themselves from capitalism, why would they continue to have statues of Nelson or of Rhodes or whatever, unless those are of some artistic value? But what I object to is just hushing up the statues when the capitalism and the exploitation and the oppression are in fact all still there, but it's just making it polite. And I mean, it's why I say I would rather call attention to the fact that Oriel College has a Rhodes statue and point out that that's because it got money from Rhodes, because it's because as an organisation it's been involved with what the ruling class is doing. It's not just sitting quietly in Oxford contemplating the universe. And similarly with Bill Clinton and the Margaret Thatcher Centre and all the rest of that. I mean, the time to change the symbols is when you're also changing the reality. But if we're not, if we're leaving the reality the same, then I'd rather it continue to look like what it is, I think would be my general view.
Disagree.
Some nations have resorted to nationalization, but before the nationalization, they believed in dictatorship and supported dictators like Pezan. And after the nationalization, that Bolsheviks, for example, came to power, this dictatorship continued. This, therefore, a nation cannot join bourgeois democracy and suddenly become a socialist nation. On the other hand, they didn't abolish inheritance because the work of parents is not the work of kids, you know. Inheritance should be abolished, otherwise, there is equal opportunity policy. On the other hand, if we want to abolish inheritance, before that they may transfer their wealth to their kids and families and friends. Therefore, as there is a law in Britain as well now, a maximum of £3,000 a year can be transferred from every individual to all other individuals, and more than that is taxed. But we should put a maximum limit for wealth transfer in socialism. Otherwise, the capitalism will be, market capitalism will be restored, as has been restored in all alleged socialist nations. Inheritance and the maximum wealth transfer have been missed from the literature of hitherto existing Marxist abolition of inheritance.
I thought that was Bakunin, wasn't it? Sorry.
Do you think Oxbridge should be... I think I agree with you about the statues, by the way. I think they should be kept, sort of, but they definitely need to be moved into places different. That is definitely true. Do you think Oxbridge should be removed and not exist as the primary education system of this country?
You mean under socialism or now?
Right as now. Before and in under socialism as well. Do you think you can be a socialist and support Oxbridge?
What does support mean?
Endorse its existence. Do you endorse the, as a socialist, do you endorse the existence of Oxbridge, which is empire, of course?
Well, I think the same is true of other universities, the same is true of analogous universities in other countries. I don't think there's anything special about Oxbridge.
So you think as being a socialist, you can have Oxbridge?
I don't think it's different from the Sorbonne or Harvard or Humboldt University. I mean...
No, I agree.
It's the same thing as in every, is in every country.
So you're happy to have it? Yes,
or no. This is like, what's it called?
I'm not sure that there is a yes or no. I mean, I'm not happy to have very much about the current society. But that doesn't mean that I pick out individual things and think it would be much better if we got rid of those. You could get rid of Oxbridge without touching the capitalist nature of British society.
What's the next question?
Can I follow on that last one?
Yeah,
Oxbridge is supported, of course, by capitalist industry to present people to the institutions of power, media, education, of course. So getting rid of Oxbridge would cut off their capitalists' stranglehold on society and all the institutions which represent a society. So yes, getting rid of Oxbridge is essential as a socialist, unless you're a capitalist.
I don't agree with that. I don't think... I think capitalism could carry on perfectly happily by sending the sons and daughters of the bourgeoisie to Durham instead of Oxford, if there weren't any Oxbridge.
Yes, I meant Oxford as a model of education, so
that's different.
Institution would disappear as well.
Well, so all universities?
No, just all the universities are not owned by the people, which are owned by the capitalist system. I.e., because the London School Economics, for example, is bought and sold by, is owned by an oil company, and Oxbridge is owned by the military and oil company, and all the other institutions of capitalist power. They own that place and pay for it, not stock and barrel, which I would imagine be against socialist endeavour.
What have we discussed about the university? If it was taken away, but when it just goes to another university.
Yeah, this is what I'm suggesting.
But then we would own the university they go to and control how people...
Which university do we own now? University do we control?
Well, that's what I change tomorrow. By getting rid of Oxbridge, we would then introduce a system where the people would own schools of education, whatever they would be called, but they would be owned by the people. And they would be educated by the people, for the people, not an education system for the elite, by the elite, and excluding everyone that is the people. Thank you.
Do you want to say something on this?
Some people study by coming in the AML field. They study 4 hours, then they do private study. Some people study 1 hour. Well, actually, Oxbridge may be a top university for those who study 4 hours a day during their A-level. Why shouldn't we have a better university for those who are better in studying than those who are married, who get later kids and don't want to study? And their father comes home and watches television, their mother as well, and they do the same. They study just a few minutes a day. Then should they go to top universities of anywhere in the world? While top universities are for those, universities are determined by their students, their ability to study, doing certain things. Otherwise, universities have no meaning except the caliber of the students.
Can we talk about universities in socialism?
Not enormously.
Sorry.
Yeah, on this criticising some of the universities, Oxbridge, whatever, but I mean the whole of education is geared to the benefit of the system, whatever system is in existence at the time. At the moment, it's capitalism, and the whole of education is geared to the needs of the system. We want people to be concerned about all aspects of life and things that happen, but to look at the basis of the system, to look at the basis of capitalism, and to start from that, to how do we get rid of capitalism? We need to be organised consciously and politically to get rid of capitalism. And whatever the needs for socialism will be for education, people will need to have the skills necessary to fulfil the human needs without the cost and profit, cost of the environment, of course, but not the financial cost and profit. So we will need to have an education that goes with it, but education as part of life, in the same way as there won't be separation between work and leisure, in the same way that there is now between employment and leisure, but education as a part of whole life. And though people might question what happens at universities, it's not enough in itself. Any of these things become sort of red herrings if people sort of concentrate on that one thing without sort of looking at the system and what gives rise to how things are run. So what we want is to get rid of capitalism, and the other changes will come.
I agree with that completely. I mean, I'm sure you're right that in socialism, it will be much less an idea of studying as something that you do for a fixed part of your life, and then you stop doing it and you go off and do something else. But that as a normal part of life, you would do some studying, and that would be often indistinguishable from work or leisure or other activities, and you wouldn't have a system as we have now, where a lot of the purpose of education is producing qualifications that can fit into a CV that employer can then use to decide who they're hiring and so on. So it wouldn't be like that, but the details will sort themselves out, and there might be a lot of diversity of different kinds of models and ways of thinking about education that we don't necessarily know now what it would look like.
Just following on from Pat. Yeah, our whole education system reflects the society that we live in, and it works pretty well. It's a capitalist system, and that's we're all kind of herded into various classes and various bits of the job that we have to do that capitalism requires. And I would imagine that once socialism is established, that the education system would look completely different. Whether there'll be universities or not, I very much doubt they'll look anything like they do now. And, you know, we will just have basically a free education system, and it won't have any bearing on our education system. The way that we heard young children from the age of four, you know, they should be out learning about the world and life. But our education system basically speaks, but works for the system that we're in. And like you say, I think it would look very, very different in a social society, and quite exciting really thinking about it.
Yeah, just perhaps on the socialism, the people who have used this story, like the bankers and the money movers,
You know, people don't produce the necessary things of life, like light and heat and bread and food and culture, in a sense. Then people would be working for the benefit of all. And there may come a time when, instead of having unemployment, like we go into capitalism, we'll be able to give shorter hours for people to contribute to the economy, or whatever you want to call it, to the socialist society. And you could be in a situation where you could be doing a job of work in a day and being an artist of an evening, or even going fishing. Because the amount of time that would be useful to a person, or a person could use, would be different under socialism.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think one of the kind of obvious dysfunctionalities about capitalism as it is the combination of very long hours with mass unemployment. Obviously not an efficient way of dividing up labour. A lot can be presented to people if you're making the case of how socialism might be different from capitalism, just by focusing on short hours with a guarantee that you won't fall into unemployment. Because if you have much shorter working hours, then people are not defined by their job. It would be possible for somebody to do their job and also, as you say, be an artist or do research or all kinds of other things. And they would have the time and the energy to do that. So it wouldn't be as it is now. You know, if you say to somebody, what do you do? It means, what are you exploited doing? Whereas in a socialist system, what do you do would mean what do you do? What, you know, how do you spend your time? What useful or enjoyable things are you contributing? And so on. So yeah, I agree completely with that emphasis.
Just one more point. I believe that the word education comes from educare, which I believe is to bring out rather than force in. So the present system of pushing information into jugs, you know, and getting them to learn it, may be replaced by saying, well, you know, what inherent skills or abilities do these people have, and how can we bring them to bear? You've got certain places like AS Neil Summit, when I don't know too much about this, but a lot of the pupils could decide what they were going to learn. And of course, there's de-schooling society by, what's his name now? Someone must know. De-schooling society.
It's illegible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, went into the process of, you know, maybe people with children or big people at school are learning things which are not actually going to benefit them. You know, maybe these people will never get at a certain level, they'd be better off trying to do other things which would be more suitable to them.
We've worked that out here.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I'd just like to add, listening to the last speaker, I just think it's a very wonderful notion that an individual can go home in the evening and create artwork for himself, and that should be seen as a great contribution to the community and a sign and symbol of a society which is working correctly for itself.
I agree absolutely. I mean, I think it's much less likely that you would need to cram or get people to rote learn things in a society where people were not living as wage workers under capitalism, where actually you're quite powerless in society. So why would you learn about the world when you can't control it, you can't shape it, you can't contribute to it outside a job that will more or less be allocated to you, because effectively, finding any sort of work is so competitive that people just do whatever job they can. I mean, that's incidentally another of the things that that capitalism gets so obviously wrong that people, the work that people end up doing has no relationship to what they'd be good at or what they'd enjoy, and so on. But if people were running society and no longer in a subordinate position, then I'd have thought try and stop them picking up the facts about the world that they think they need to know in order to in order to do that successfully and to get the results that, that they want.
Getting back to the original subject of the talk this afternoon, I just wanted to relate an experience that I had with Facebook. And it kind of amazes me that this Facebook group, supposed to be Marxist, blah, 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 archive, whatever it is, these are mostly young people. And it worries me that young people are so censorious, actually. The subject of transgender came up, and we, a couple of comrades from the party and I, were putting forward a what is the notion of what is gender. Basically, we were challenging the notion of gender and how it is in society. Eventually, I was accused of being a TERF. That's a, I didn't even know what that was, but it was explained to me. I'm trans-exclusionary radical feminist. And myself and two comrades were thrown off the site. I mean, there was no discussion. I cannot believe these are young people. You expect that from sort of granddad, you're more like this, but... And most of these people are university educated. Can you explain this phenomenon?
That was the explanation. Maybe university educated.
But wasn't that one of the, Germaine Greer, didn't she get no platform for saying something about there weren't really women if you were a man and changed to a woman?
Yes, exactly. She did. I mean, this is one of the issues that you certainly can be platformed for, or thrown off a discussion group or whatever it might be. But it does. I think you'd get that more from young people than from other age groups, I suspect. I mean, it's because you've crossed a line and you've said something that somebody can be offended by. That means that the view can't be debated. You can just be shut down. And I think that's a problem. And I think as far as young people at university are concerned, it provides a way of feeling as though you're very radical while still sort of remaining within liberalism. That most of what you're against is actually things that quite moderate liberal mainstream people would also be against. But the difference is you get more angry about it, you clamp down on it harder. So you feel as though you're challenging the system or challenging the establishment, whereas you're in fact staying within the scope of things that the liberal mainstream already agrees with. Just you're doing it in a more radical, more kind of energetic way.
But to come back to the subject again, continue with the subject. You mentioned Belthorpe Bax. Now, if there was a statue to Belthorpe Bax, who thought the women were inferior to men and shouldn't be given the vote, let's ask the socialist women here whether they're offended by the statue to Belthorpe Bax, even though he did write some good stuff. I mean, he was one of the people in the Socialist League who understood what Marx was all about, didn't he?
Yes, I mean, there isn't, sadly, such a statue. But if there were, it would be based on... I mean, I sort of think that the standards for those, the first generation of British socialists have to be a little bit different anyway, because Bax came to socialism as an adult having not, you know, having already got views, a lot of which were awful, and did his best to get out of them, but didn't get out. I've got the point, maybe that's true of all of us, that we have some reactionary views that we don't manage to overcome. But I would rather concentrate on, certainly with people like that, concentrate on celebrating what they got right, rather than denouncing them for the stuff that they definitely didn't. But no, you're quite right.
Well, we've got a natural break. We can have a collection, and I can announce the next meeting here, which is in a fortnight's time, which is the Sunday before the referendum, and it's going to be called the EU Referendum Campaign, The Lies and the Counter-Lies. So that'll be the 3 p.m. on Sunday the 19th of June. We've also got, incidentally, our leaflet here on the referendum called An Irrelevant Sideshow, which...
Perhaps if you change the name to a sideshow called Desire, you might get more opinions.
Right. You thought of a question there, did you, Arthur? Is that your hand? Oh, your hand, sorry.
As you know, private means of production and distribution of goods are not the only things in Asia. Therefore, private schools can exist. Right now. That some schools get 32 and even more £1,000 a year for some kids to educate. And therefore, private teachers are necessary in specialization. Some of them may want to include private teachers. And they are workers of the world manager. But some kids don't need private teachers. For example, their parents are educated. They have them. You know? This is why we need to think about abolition of inheritance and putting a maximum amount of reserve. Why that kid that receives education free from their parents, those kids, they don't pay for it. Their family and an economic unit does not pay. But others should pay to the world management. How can we solve this problem?
You're not talking about abolishing private teachers under capitalism, are you?
In private schools, right?
Oh, private schools, okay, yeah, yeah.
But it cannot be worse than smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol, employing private teachers. I work myself as a private teacher,
okay, yeah,
in my previous policy. And in Iran, in fact. As a private teacher, I got beaten by my students, one of my students, and I beat him because I had no other organized, you know. He beat every teacher he confronted. And I think there is no, if people can smoke, can drink alcohol, level, they can get private teachers from world management.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a capitalist society, then private schools and private tutors will exist. And some parents will hire them. In a socialist society where you don't have wage labour at all, then among other things, you don't have people paid to be private tutors. I mean, some people would presumably do teaching because they enjoyed doing it, or they thought it was important, or they found it rewarding, or the same reasons why free people in a socialist society would devote some of their time to anything. I'm sure there would be people who would be educators in that sense. But naturally, it wouldn't be limited to people who could pay for it, because there wouldn't be such a thing as money, and there wouldn't be such a thing as payments, and nothing else would be limited to only people who could afford to pay for it. So in that sense, the problem kind of disappears when you solve the larger problem.
Okay, if you want to ask a question, we can...
Would you mind if I... Oh, no. I'd just like to add a reason why communities are not allowed to create their own artwork and develop that sort of essence of being. Can I have a reason for that?
Yeah.
Because as soon as a community starts creating its own identity, it automatically creates its own history, and therefore something worth fighting for. It's a real physical thing. Is the artwork in the community. And so the capitalist or AKA church has to make sure that this is not an opportunity that's open to the people for that very reason. Give a symbol of how brilliant communities can be. And that's a dangerous thing to the capitalist. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we don't have to carry on till 5 o'clock, you know. It has to get away by then. We can go upstairs and continue discussing over a cup of tea and some cakes. So, unless anybody's got another question or another contribution, I'll just thank Ed for coming all the way from the Ox part of Oxbridge to give this talk, and thank him.
Okay. Oh, thank you.